I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back to the Two Mics on the Record. This is the series of podcasts that we've been doing for quite some time now. I think we're into year two, well into year two.
Yes.
And if you haven't listened to all of them, please do go back through the archive.
Mm.
You can find them all, of course, through iTunes and, of course, through our On the Record podcast Twitter feed.
Yes.
We are the Two Mics. You're Mike Parry. I'm Mike
Graham.
We've got lots to do today.
Yeah, Hawkey. We are.
We're very newsy oriented today because there's been a lot going on.
Indeed.
What do you got for us?
Well, let me tell you this, right? Obviously, we've just come to the end of the conference season.
We have.
Although, funny enough, as we speak,
it
is just the ending of the SNP conference.
The SNP conference.
Think anybody cares?
Well, do you know,
Scottish National Party.
I wondered why. Yeah. Well, I think,
and Wee Bernie.
Well, people do, you know.
Wee Bernie.
Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about Wee Bernie.
I don't think you're using the right term.
Yeah, I am.
You're talking about my friend
about.
Nicola Sturgeon.
Your friend Nicola Sturgeon.
She's not known as Wee Bernie.
She's known as Wee Bernie to some newspaper columnists who call her Wee Bernie.
She's known as many names, some of which are derisory, which I'm not going to repeat here, because she used to be quite a good friend of mine, Nicola Sturgeon.
Yeah.
And we don't really speak as much as we used to since she's become the highest job in the land.
First Minister.
But, you know, they've been in charge for 11 years now, the SNP in Scotland. And I was watching an interview with her earlier this week in which somebody said to her, you know, the thing is, it's all very well you saying, you know, well, can he do anything because of that Westminster people crowd, you know?
Yeah.
And, well, that's not true because they're in charge of their own health. They're in charge of their own education.
They're in charge
of their own laws.
They get billions of pounds of money which is generated generally in the southeast of England to run their own country. Mm. And yet still, Wee Bernie is coming out and saying, I think we'll have another referendum on Europe.
Yeah.
But I'm not that bothered about having another referendum on being an independent country.
Well, they don't want to
do that. Because she knows she'll lose it.
Well, one, they'll lose it because of what I'm told by the people in Scotland, even some of whom I know who used to support the SNP, they're saying, well, they've kind of screwed up the country. They haven't really made it any better.
No.
They're just like every other bloody politicians.
And
like
Ruth Davidson, the Tory leader, in the Scottish Parliament.
Well, she's going to be off having a baby soon, isn't she?
Yeah, she is, but I mean, she's not going to step down from her political duties.
But she doesn't want to do anything other than run in Scotland. And the Tories never been in charge of Scotland.
That. She keeps saying
Do you don't believe her?
Well, I don't believe her. I think all politicians go into politics because they're ambitious and they want to achieve high office,
Well,
you know?
She says that she doesn't think that she's fit for high office on account of all the problems she's got and on account of the fact that she's about to become a new mother.
Yeah, well...
So she doesn't want to be Prime Minister.
Well...
She said that. And I think she's one of the new breed of politicians who actually tell the truth.
Yeah, well, you say that. Yeah, very impressive woman anyway. Mm. Anyway, getting back to it.
Yeah,
so, old John McDonnell.
John McDonnell, God bless
him. Just reviewing the, reviewing the conference season. Did you go any conferences, by the way?
I didn't in the end, no. I mean...
I went to Brighton one night with Paul Potts.
Oh, Jimmy, I thought you meant this year.
No.
I have been
yeah,
in the past.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Well, when I was at the Mirror, we used to go and do the Labour one, because the Mirror had the
course,
big party at the Labour conference.
Yeah.
And in fact, funnily enough, it was also in Brighton.
Mm.
And we had that, do you know when you go to Brighton Beach, they've got those nightclubs sort of on the beach.
That's right, yeah.
And we had a party in there.
Great,
And I went and sat with a guy, because funnily enough, Piers Morgan went early on, because it was an Arsenal game for some reason going on. We had to all go and watch it in this club.
Right.
And the guy who was there was Polly Graham's father.
Oh, yeah.
And you might remember Polly Graham. She was one of the 3AM, original 3AM girls.
That's right, of course she was,
who came from the Express. But her dad was one of those guys who was a sort of civil servant, quite posh
servant. Actually, one of the 3AM girls was also the daughter of quite a famous showbiz person. And I'm trying to remember who it is.
Really?
Yeah, it was one of the goodies or something. something like that.
How was it about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I don't know about
yeah.
that. Well, there was, yeah. there was Paul Callan's daughter, of course.
Paul Callan's daughter, that's yeah. right, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, well, he's not from showbiz.
No, he's, well, he's he was... I mean, he was...
Paul Callan famously got the number of pallbearers wrong at Diana's funeral.
Really?
Even though he was actually there. Dear boy! He was also famous for writing his colour pieces before anything had happened.
Yeah.
So that he could get straight to the pub.
No, but the greatest story about Paul Callan was, right, he was... is he still alive, Paul?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, OK. Well, no, he'll enjoy this story.
So don't libel him.
I won't libel him.
Because he might be looking for a few quid in his old age.
He might be, but he'll enjoy the story. Yeah. So we're all over in California, right, in... Santa Monica, I think it is, or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Probably doing one of those trials about, you know, men being tried for injecting lamb's urine into women's bodies
something
to give
like
them
that.
Everlasting life or something like that, you know what I mean? And Paul Conyu was there as well, Paul Callan.
Of course.
Such a big story. They sent over the reinforcements from London in the form of Paul
those
Callan.
Those days.
That's right. And, I remember that Paul, who had a great way with words and
he
all
did.
That.
He was a terrific guy, actually.
He's still a terrific guy. And he ended up in a penthouse suite in this particular hotel with three very nice young ladies.
Uh-huh.
But after thinking that the young ladies had actually chosen to seek his company because he was very attractive, he suddenly worked out they were hookers.
Right.
And
As you do.
But he'd spent an hour there.
Right.
And these hookers suddenly started getting rather demanding, you know, and saying, well, you know, we're giving you an hour of your time. You know, what about it? You know.
And where is this, in a hotel bar or something?
This is in a penthouse suite.
Oh, in a suite.
In a hotel.
Right.
And you know, Paul's not naive, but on this particular occasion, he said, well, I'm sorry, I don't know what you mean. And they said, come on, Lamy, you know, you spent an hour with us now, you know, what do you want to do? You want to twist or you want to fold? And he said, I beg your pardon, my dear, it seems like that. You know, what are you talking about?
He had a monocle at one point, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think he had a monocle
at one point. Brian Vine did.
Yes.
The other guy in America. Anyway. So Paul hadn't suddenly realised he was sitting there with these three hookers, you know, and they were expecting to either pay him some. He was expected to either pay him some money or get down to like action. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you want to do something, you get on with it.
Right.
You know,
well, they have
you don't
to
waste
move
our
on.
Time.
I mean, you know, they're, for them, it's all about churning the customers.
And, anyway, Paul came up with a brilliant solution. He said, "Look," he said, "you know, I don't deal with these sorts of things. I'm rather not even from England." He said, However, my colleague, who I'm with today, is head of my newspaper's operation in America.
Right.
I'll get him to sort this out, okay?
Yeah.
And he literally rang downstairs, because Conyu and a lot of the other guys were still in the bar.
Uh-huh.
And he rang the bar, because there were no mobile phones in those days.
Right.
He said, hello, it's
Callan here. He used to call himself Callan.
Yeah, Callan here. I said, Daily Mirror, London Daily Mirror. He said, you'll find my man, Conyu, is in the bar there. Would you bring him to the phone? So Conyu comes to the phone. As you know, Conyu had had an irascible appetite for women all his life.
Well, I mean, I don't know that. I do know that he's been married more than once.
He was known as Snorkelcock in the West Midlands.
Are you sure?
Yeah, definitely. When he was...
He's definitely still alive.
Yeah, he's definitely still alive, and doing a great job with some charity or something.
He is,
you know.
Yeah. He comes on Talk Radio quite a bit as well.
He was known as Snorkelcock because in those days without mobile phones, he would disappear and resurface, you know, sometime later, you know what I mean?
So it's nothing to do with the word cock.
Well, you know, I've no idea. Yeah. I don't know why people called him
that. I've never heard that.
No, well, that's what he's called.
Okay. You sure that's not just what you called him?
Oh, No, he's well known in the newspaper business as that. So anyway, he ran and said, Paul, he said, it's Callan upstairs here. He said, some people here would really love to meet you. You know, I've briefed them as much as I can on what we're doing here at the Mirror and what we get on with, but, you know, they want the top man. Right, okay. And I said, Paul, where are you? We're in the penthouse. Right. We'd like to come up now and meet these people, please. Yeah. It'll be great.
Yeah.
So Conyu said, and who are they? Well, he said, look, these are high-powered people, Paul, and one or two of them are very attractive, believe me. Right, okay, right. So anyway, so Callan then leaves it 2 minutes, slips out the room.
Yeah.
This is almost like an episode of The Saint or something, you know.
Yeah.
Slips out the room, waits till the lift pings, rushes round the corner, sees Conyu come out, knock on the penthouse door and go in.
Yeah.
Callan jumps in the lift and goes downstairs. Uh-huh. Conyu ended up, it is rumoured, having to pay for the time that had been used up by these particular ladies.
Right, okay. So he had to part with money.
I'm not suggesting for a moment that anybody indulged in any physical activity or anything like that, but
that
it was caught in a difficult situation.
Yeah,
you know
well,
what
it's
I mean?
Difficult sometimes to get out of those situations without paying money.
Absolutely.
That is quite tricky. I mean, I had a couple of interesting occasions along those kind of lines where you'd end up talking to somebody, particularly in hotels and hotel bars, quite innocently, and it happened to me a couple of times where I was talking to some woman at a bar, waiting for somebody to meet up with or something like that, and not even with a thought in my head about doing anything nefarious.
Yes.
You know? But as the time would go on, and you'd think, well, actually, I've got to meet somebody, but it'd be great to maybe have a drink later or something like that. You know? And it would all be going quite smoothly, and it would all be going quite normally. And then suddenly, a couple of times it happened, where the woman would sort of draw you slightly closer to her and say, you do realise that'll be 500.
Yeah.
And I was always really shocked.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, I'd come from England where I didn't consort with prostitutes. You know, I didn't hang around with hookers.
No, absolutely.
And, of course, I didn't really hang around in very expensive hotels.
No.
But you and I started doing that.
Yeah.
When we were working in America, because that's where all the action was, and that's where you stayed.
The best example is in Moscow.
Yeah.
Right, I've been in Moscow about half a dozen times. Okay, always stay in a great hotel. There's a hotel called the Metropole, right on the edge of Red Square.
Do they have all the kind of Western chains there, or not really?
Yes, they do. Yeah, all of them.
So you'll find like a Sheraton or a Ritz-Carlton and all that.
All at the highest level, Ritz-Carlton, Mandarin, Oriental, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, all around Red Square, you know, all around Red Square.
Okay.
I mean, the world is changing in terms of the acceptance of Russian wealth.
Yeah,
no doubt about that, because we're seeing the problems we had in this country and all that kind of stuff. But nevertheless,
you think we're sort of going against it now rather than welcoming
it? Yeah, I do. I think there's a political movement now to say Russian money is not necessarily good money like it used to be.
Well, I mean, I'm sure I don't think anyone ever thought that it was good money, but I think they kind of turned a blind eye because it was so much money. You know what I mean?
When Konrad Abramovich came here first, he was welcomed with open arms.
Yeah.
He brought wealth into
now
this country.
Now he can't get in the country.
Now he can't get in the country. And that's nothing to do with Mr. Abramovich or anything he's done. The problem is that the political relationship between our government and the Russian government has deteriorated to such a point.
But he couldn't move into Switzerland either.
No, he couldn't.
You know, so, I mean, it's something to do with him. But whether it's anything correctly to do with him, we don't know.
I'd prefer to say it's something to do with relations between Mr. Putin and the West.
Uh-huh.
And I think there are victims.
Really?
And I think Mr. Abramovich is probably
a victim of that.
Yeah. Well, I think he's probably a victim of the deteriorating relationship between Mr. Putin and the West. You know, and I can't stop. But anyway, so you'd go in, we'd be out for the night working, you know, either a football
match or something.
Yeah, it could have been the England game. The England game only happened one night, but on other nights we'd go out and we'd do stuff.
Well, like Champions League, you were there for the game in England.
Absolutely, yeah. But we'd also go out and meet Russian people, stuff for the breakfast show for Alan Brazil tomorrow and all that kind of stuff, you know. And whenever you came back at about 10:30 time after that, these incredibly gorgeous, beautiful-looking women were sitting around in the foyer smoking cigarettes, which is still allowed in Russia, with very long legs and their crossed legs sitting in these couches and all that. And
presumably very well-dressed as well.
Incredibly well-dressed.
Yeah.
Their nails were beautifully manicured. Yeah. They were done up beautifully and all that. And there was absolutely no doubt about what they were there for.
Right.
And you would walk through and they would smile at you. And if you hesitated for one second and smiled back, they're out their seat and with you and their arm was in your arm.
Yeah.
And they would just, and it was all known to the guy behind the desk, you know, what room you were in.
Yes.
And you just walk to the desk, give you a key, and all of a sudden, before you'd had time to protest, you could find yourself in the lift of one of these ladies, and you're away.
Luckily, that never happened to you.
Never happened to me.
Or indeed anyone in your party.
Never happened to me or anybody in my party.
You
know?
Sure.
I'm absolutely certain.
You hesitated slightly.
No hesitation.
I'll tell you the other time it happened to me. I was in Belgium, of all places, and funnily enough, it was shortly after my third son was born.
Yeah.
Well, I say my third son, my second son was born, so a few years ago.
Yeah.
And we decided to take him over to Germany to meet some friends, and we were driving, so we drove back, and we stayed in Brussels, right, for the night. And I used to be in the Hilton sort of, Honours Club or whatever.
Yeah.
So we stayed in the Hilton in Brussels, which is very nice. It's, well, you know how some Hiltons are not so good?
Yeah.
Some Hiltons are great.
Mm.
This is one of the really good ones, really expensive, right?
Mm.
And I was still smoking in those days.
Yeah.
So the kid, who was only about maybe 2 years old.
What do you mean, the kid?
The kid. I refer to him as the kid. So I don't like to give his name out because it's not
so
very helpful.
So you're talking about your child?
I'm talking about my son, yeah.
It's a bit offhand, isn't it? The kid.
Well, why not?
Sounds like a goat.
Well, hang on. You speak to Noel Gallagher. What does he call Liam?
Our kid. Our kid. But that's a northern thing. In Manchester, well, not the kid.
Well, the kid I'm talking about in the story is good enough because I don't wish to reveal his name. I know that you're very happy to give away the names of our children every time we talk about them. Anyway, so he and his mother had gone upstairs. I said, I'm going to stay down and have one final cigarette.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't smoke in the room, you can still smoke in the lobby of the hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
And these three very attractive sort of African women walked towards me, similarly to you, where you described, very well-dressed.
Yeah.
One of them said, could I have a cigarette, please? And normally, I'd tell people to piss off if they want a cigarette.
Yeah,
you know,
but in, not a beautiful occasion, woman. What are you going to be rude for?
Well, exactly. So I thought, well, all right then. I said, I'll, you know, and I sort of struck up a conversation. I said, well, I don't normally do this, but you know, for you, you can have a cigarette. As I'm lighting the cigarette, she's standing with her two friends. She says, can I have another two cigarettes? So I went, well, I suppose so, but only on this occasion.
You're taking the mickey here.
Slightly taking the mickey. Yeah. Right? So I give her two more cigarettes. As the second cigarette is being lit.
Were these English cigarettes, by the way?
These were Marlboros. So American.
Right, okay. International cigarette.
International, but Marlboros, Red Marlboros, in fact, because I was smoking in those days.
Yeah.
As the third one lights the third one up, the first one says to me, do you want sex? And I was, like, similarly slightly taken aback.
Well, presumably you said yes, but not with you.
Well, actually, no, I didn't say yes. Right, okay. And if I did say that, she probably might have punched me.
Yeah, exactly.
Or some bloke might have suddenly appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because I think it's very dangerous to say yes to these people.
Yes.
I said, no, it's very kind. Thank you very much indeed. But, you know, my child is upstairs with his mother.
Yes.
And I'm going to go up and be with them.
Yeah.
But thanks anyway. Yeah. Are you sure? I mean, they were quite sort of... But it was very brazen.
Yeah.
This was in the middle of the lobby.
Business.
Of a hotel.
It's business to them.
Yeah, no, I know it's to them. But what about the people that own the bloody hotel?
Yeah, well, they're all in
doing
on it.
Entertaining this?
They're all in on it. I mean, you see adverts in the Evening Standard now, the London paper, you know, and it's like a hotel in Paddington, you know, hourly rates. Well, who takes a hotel for an hour unless it's for a bit of horizontal refreshment?
Well, I've told you that
we're the lady of the night.
The
you
only
know?
Place I've ever seen that, and I think legitimately it's a good thing, is the old the hotel in the Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam, which you can rent by the hour.
Right.
Because quite often, I used to fly via Schiphol to go to America to see my other kids from Glasgow.
Yeah.
So I'd go to Schiphol and I'd be stuck there for maybe 2 hours.
Yeah.
And quite often, if I fancied it, I'd put my head down for an hour and have a shower. It would have been nice.
Yes.
I never actually did it.
Well, I've done that. I was coming back from Cornwall one time.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic story in which a helicopter went down and everybody died.
Yeah, you see, only you could describe that as a fantastic story.
Well,
I know that you and I speak in these terms, but when people listen to this, they think, what a heartless bastard.
Well, I'm not being heartless.
Well, you are, because you're using journalese, right, to describe, it's a fantastic story. You never see anything like it. All these people died when the helicopter plunged into the sea.
This helicopter was going
the icy depths.
Yeah, that's right. It was going from Penzance to the Scilly Isles, right, and the pilot just lost the critical line between sea and sky.
Easy to do.
So he flew straight into the sea and all that, and they all died of shock. And I saw the helicopter pulled up, and they were all sitting in their window seats with their eyes open, died of shock. It was terrible.
With their eyes open?
Your eyes open, No, they were.
You made that bit up?
No, I did not make that bit up. I saw them. Anyway, the thing is, we worked for about 3.5 days, and then on the last night, got completely bladderated.
You were staying on the mainland, not in the Scilly Isles?
No, in the Scilly Isles. Okay. In the Scilly Isles.
I've never been there.
Yeah.
What's it like?
Weird.
Is it?
Very
weird.
Is it
sort of Isle of Man weird? Or
well, much more weird than the Isle of Man.
Is
much
it?
More weird than the Isle of Man.
Right.
But
did you see that thing about Lewis the other day, by the way? Where they had the Wee, you know, the Wee Free.
Yes, that's right,
And they had the Gay Pride
that's
March.
That's right, yeah.
And there were actually
and all the
people
Wee Free
standing
saying,
there.
You know, it is a sin for man to lie with man.
Yeah,
it's
amazing.
Yeah, yeah,
amazing.
No, yeah.
It was like something out of the last century.
It was, yeah.
Or the 17th century.
It was, yeah.
Anyway.
But anyway, on the last night, you know, and I've been working day and night, you know, working my bollocks off, you know, as I always did.
Yes.
And on the last night, this amazing thing, in a thing called the Star and Garter Hotel, which was a converted fort and all that, where we were all staying. But then we had to leave at sort of, we drank till about four, we had to leave at six on the last ferry, the last ferry, okay? So I got over
6 p.m.
No, we drunk till 4 a.m. and had to get the ferry at 6 a.m.
Oh, sorry.
Right, so, and you know, that was about 4 hours. I'd flown there by helicopter, came back, and anyway, so when I landed in Cornwall, my car was still parked at Penzance. I then had to drive up from Cornwall.
Well, surely you weren't fit to drive.
No, of course I wasn't fit to drive.
Right.
And well, that took about 3 hours, the ferry, or 4 hours. So I got my car, drove for about an hour, and then thought, I'm going to collapse.
Yeah.
So I went to a hotel, like, you know, in rural Cornwall.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like a country house hotel.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, hello. I said, I'm sorry to bother you. I said, I know it's only midday.
Right.
I said, but I desperately need to sleep and I want to rent a room, please, for the afternoon.
Could you not have slept in the car?
I didn't want to sleep in the car. Right. I needed a bed.
Okay.
I was so knackered, you know. And I and they said, really? So I explained who I was. Yeah, yeah. I had my press card. I pointed out that I've been working, you know, for the last 4 days.
On this fantastic story, all these people have died.
On this terrible story. Can I lie down?
Right.
And they said, yes, but they put a guard on the door.
What?
I think they thought I was going to invite a woman. To their, honest to God.
Really?
Honest to God. They said, how long do you want to sleep for? And I said, I need about 4 or 5 hours sleep, please. If I can rent the room for the afternoon, I will leave by 6 p.m.
Do you think they thought that you were some kind of, you said I was some kind of knocking shop?
I don't know. I've no idea.
Have you ever checked into a hotel with a woman?
No.
Right. What do you mean, no?
What do you mean?
Well, I haven't asked the question
right,
yet.
Right, okay.
I was going to say, have you ever checked into a hotel with a woman?
Yeah.
Right, where they've given you this look where they go, well, I know what you're fucking up to.
No.
No?
No.
What, you mean you've always had luggage with you, have you?
No. I send her into the bar, I check the room and all that, I get the room number and all that kind of stuff, and I don't check in with her. What would you check in with a woman for?
I'm just asking you a question.
No, I just give her the key.
So you do it surreptitiously?
Of course I do.
They ask you if you want 2 keys?
I always take 2 keys. I say, I have 2 keys, please, because it makes life easier. Yeah. That's all I ever say. And they say, you know, I know, by the way, that Gary, who was Nick's driver, right?
Oh, yeah.
He was a terrible shagger.
Was he?
Yeah, he honestly tried on with everybody all the time. Yeah. And one time he went to a 2-star hotel.
No.
In somewhere like East London.
That's
or
a bit
something.
Grubby.
Yeah, but they wouldn't, you know, even they wouldn't let him check in without a suitcase.
Really?
So he used to carry, believe it or not, this empty suitcase around in the back of Nick's car.
Right.
And whenever he picked a lady up who he thought would stay the night with him, he'd wander into this hotel, this battered suitcase.
With nothing in it.
Yeah. And say, oh, yeah, I can see you're a traveller, OK. And they'd give him the room. It was unbelievable.
Jeffrey Dahmer used to carry a suitcase with him when he checked into hotel rooms, but he used to have a tailor's dummy in it.
Really?
And when he got it in the room, he used to shag it.
Don't be ridiculous.
I'm not joking.
You're joking. That's shocking.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
So anyway, I thought we were supposed to be talking about conference season.
Yeah, well, that's conference season.
How do we get to that from Jeffrey Dahmer shagging the tailor's dummy?
God knows, I don't know. It's a terrible story.
That's how, no, because you know he started out, right, as what's called a paraphiliac, right? Have you heard of a necrophiliac? Right?
Yeah.
A paraphiliac is somebody who enjoys having sex with inanimate objects.
Really?
And that's how he got started on his crime spree and his terrible lust for killing people, because he didn't actually want to kill you.
Yeah.
He wanted to put you into a state of suspended animation, which is why he used to inject acid into their brains.
Good God.
Right, because what that then did was it made them still alive, but incapable of movement.
It's a shocking story.
I know.
I've heard of these weirdos who like to molest the exhaust pipe of a car.
Yeah.
But I hope that they don't do it when the car's just been running around.
Well, that would be very good idea, wouldn't it? Yeah. They don't do it once.
No, exactly. Yeah, yeah. This is not funny, by the way.
No,
this
it's not.
Shocking.
No,
anyway, getting back to the conference season.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you were talking about John McDonald. Yeah. How so the John hell McDonald. We got,
off
that subject.
It's conference season, and he comes up and he says, "I have decided, if Labour government gets in, we are going to propose a 4-day week."
Yeah.
I've never heard anything so ridiculous in all my life. 4-day week.
Right.
So does he mean?
Where is his accent from, by the way, McDonald? Where's he from, do you reckon? He's kind of indeterminate.
Is he Scottish or
is he's definitely
he
not
English
Scottish.
Or, no, I don't know. 4-day week. So then I think to myself, right, does that mean that somebody who works a 40-hour week will work 4 days of 10 hours?
Yeah.
Or is John McDonald proposing, no, you just work 4 days of 8 hours and the company has to pay for the rest of the working?
There is a school of thought which he buys into, which is that if you actually reduce the number of hours people work, they will be more effective and they'll be more productive because they won't waste so much time. Now, I don't know if there's any evidence for this.
No evidence.
There will be. You can find basic kind of academics who will tell you, oh, yeah, they do this in Germany, they do it in Spain.
Rubbish.
They do it in various different countries in the world, and they find that it's far more effective. No. People spend less time pissing about on Facebook.
No.
They don't walk around doing photocopying work. They don't
in Spain and the Mediterranean countries, they don't like working much anyway. That's where mañana comes from, you know, tomorrow. That's where siestas come from.
Yeah.
Everybody in like Spain and Italy and Portugal, places like that, they get to work about 10 o'clock. do a couple of hours' work, and then they go to sleep till 3 o'clock, don't they?
They do, but quite often, particularly if they run shops, well, that's changing in this. But when I remember first going to Spain when I was a kid, I couldn't believe the shops were open until like
10 o'clock at night.
Couldn't understand it.
No, I agree. And sometimes families wouldn't even go out and eat till 11 o'clock at night and all that kind of stuff.
No, exactly right. But I mean, there is a school of thought that says that we are quite unproductive as a nation.
Yeah.
And that's true.
Well, I don't accept that.
No, we are.
Well,
British
if everybody
people,
worked like me, we wouldn't be unproductive.
Well, yeah,
we'd
but
be very
you work
productive.
All the time, though.
But I
mean,
like working
you
all the
take
time.
No pleasure in leisure.
No,
that's
I don't.
Quite a good thing to say.
No,
isn't
I don't.
It? You
I
take
don't.
No pleasure in leisure. You would
I don't.
Be working all the bloody time.
No, I get guilty.
If you didn't have to stop working occasionally, you wouldn't stop.
Anyway,
you
the point of the story is...
You were once described to me by a senior figure in the broadcasting industry as being like an Energizer bunny.
Is that right?
You basically don't stop working.
Really? Yeah. Is that right? Well, that's very nice. Thank you very much indeed. I'll take that as a compliment.
It was meant as a compliment.
Right. Now then, so when I arrived at the Daily Express in Manchester in 1980, I'd come from working for the Birmingham Union Mail in London, where I worked at least 6.5 days a week.
Well, also, you were kind of bureau there.
I was bureau chief. We had a bureau of three.
So in those places, you've got to work all the time.
You work all the time. And particularly as we had a Saturday edition, I had to get in every Saturday morning as well.
Yeah.
Find them a splash, you know, a political splash, something like that, and then work through the day. And then Sundays, I was always filing stuff overnight for Monday.
Yeah.
Okay, so I worked all the time. Right. Loved it. No problem at all.
Yeah.
Well, I get to Manchester, you know, I find all these deadbeats. Mm. Who got on the old merry-go-round in the north of England.
Right.
Where
Members of the chapel.
Members of the chapel. You're absolutely right. But the thing is, there were so many options for lazy reporters in the north of England. And the only way I measured a man was if he was ambitious enough to want to go to Fleet Street proper.
Yeah.
And people like Stan Blankensop, who was the news editor, I once said to him, Stan, why didn't you just go all the way to Fleet Street? You came from the northeast of England. You were a big star up in Geordie Land. Yeah. You know, you were chief reporter on the Journal. And then you went to Manchester and then you became news.
Yeah.
He said there was no need.
Yeah.
We got exactly the same money in Manchester as London got.
Right.
London was more expensive.
Yeah.
We were hunky-dory.
And a lot of people who live in the north of England don't particularly want to live in London.
There were guys there, right, who had palaces in places like Yorkshire and Lancashire, because for what you could get in London, you could get three times the size in Manchester and Yorkshire.
Sure.
So I arrived there and I thought, this is great, you know. And on my first week, I think I started on the Sunday.
Yeah.
So Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then on Wednesday evening, you know, I was really enjoying it, getting into it. And I said to the guys, I said, okay, guys, see you tomorrow. And the guys, you know, one of the reporters said, what? I'll see you tomorrow.
Mm.
No, you're not working tomorrow. I said, no, tomorrow's Thursday.
Yeah.
You always work Thursdays.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you don't. I said, I'm sorry, I'm not with you.
Yeah.
It hadn't been explained to me. If you work Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday,
yeah.
you were then off Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Right.
And I said, I'm not with you. He said, yeah, you start work again next Tuesday.
Yeah.
Haven't you seen the rota? I said, no.
Well, what day was this? Wednesday?
This is Wednesday night.
So you're basically got a whole week off.
Exactly. This is Wednesday night.
Right.
And I said, I'm sorry, I'm not with you. He said, don't worry about it, you come back to it. I said, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I said, I'm a reporter on the Daily Express.
Yeah.
I want to work on big stories.
So what are you going to do for six days?
Exactly. 5 days. 5 days. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah.
They said, enjoy your time. We all do. He said, I do my garden for those 5 days.
Golf.
Another guy said, I go hiking in the Lake District, you know.
Well, you can go on holiday.
You
can go to Spain for 4 days.
Another one said, I go, my mate, he's the country vet, you know, I enjoy, you know, going out with him. It's like a holiday every 3 weeks.
I mean, also, you could have had a job as a cab driver or something.
Exactly.
And actually driven a cab for 4 days.
But you didn't need to. The money was so good.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you come back the following Tuesday, you work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
And then you're off Saturday. And then you're back into Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah.
You get your 5 days off again.
Right.
So I rang the news editor at home, Stan Blankensop.
Yeah.
You know, I was pissed.
Mm.
And
you were pissed or he was pissed?
I was pissed.
Okay.
I hope he was as well.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, Stan, you know, he said, look, he said, and this is on Sunday afternoon. I said, look, I've had the Thursday and Friday and Saturday off.
Yeah.
I said, I can't stand it. It's now Sunday. I said, and I've been out for Sunday lunch with the family. I'm back in my place in Sale. I said, I want to come to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm coming to work, okay? He said, you can't do that, Michael.
Yeah.
I said, Stan, I want to come to work. I want to work. I joined the Daily Express work. He said, no, I'm sorry. The rest will walk out if you come in tomorrow.
They would have done too.
I said, you're joking.
Yeah.
He said, they will.
Yeah.
I admire. Anyway, to get round it,
yeah.
He said, after the second week, he said, right, Ireland's very active. It was time of the hunger strikes in Ireland.
Yeah.
He said, do you want to go?
But did you not get in trouble there for wanting to work more than 4 days?
Yeah,
as well?
But the thing was, we got round that because you were away and away from the office, and Ireland was a, you know, like a 24-hour, 7-day-week story. Mm. What Stan did was he always made it possible for me to work by leaving it 2 or 3 days to send a replacement. Okay. Although we had staff in Northern Ireland, we had Bob Brady, who was a great piss artist. Bob was a tremendously drunk Irishman, but very capable reporter. But a typical Irishman.
Yeah.
He drank Powers whiskey all day.
Okay.
Give me a large Powers. Right. And I, because his accent was so strong, give me a large Powers.
Right.
I used to go up to the bars in Belfast and say, I'll have a large Powers, please. You have a large what? A large Powers.
Right.
You made a Powers. It was Powers.
Powers.
But they pronounced it Powers.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I've never heard of
Powers. It was called Powers, Whiskey. Yeah. But I, you know, they thought I was taking the piss by saying a Powers.
Right. That's funny. When I worked in Fleet Street the first time, I was like you.
Yeah.
Because I'd come from America. You know, I'd come back to work for this Daily Express. I could not believe how shit so many of the people were that worked there.
Exactly.
I was going, hold on a second. You know, they'd get a story in the morning and they'd still be pissing about with it about 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, I'd filed about 4 stories, been out for a 2-hour lunch, come back with another exclusive.
Yeah.
And I was going, you know, because I was used to waiting for myself.
That's right.
And I was going, what's going on here?
Absolutely.
But then when I got onto the back bench, that was the funniest, because there was a guy called Andy Gregory.
Yes.
Who you'll remember.
Yes, I do,
He used to know as the Bolton boy.
Yeah, the Bolton boy.
Him and his number two.
Andy Gregory. Lancashire lad.
Yeah, he's now at the Mail, I think. And his number two was this guy called Dave Harbord, who we used to call Cuprinol Man, because he walked over Cuprinol, the actor.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Because he used to walk so slowly. And they were both these northern guys, right? Yeah. And they'd worked out a rota, which basically meant that they worked a 3-day week.
3 days.
They never did more than 3 days.
Unbelievable.
And there was only one day when they would be on together, I think.
Yeah.
And they somehow managed to carve up the whole, you know, thing whereby they were hardly doing any work.
Yeah.
Which meant, as you know well, you can't have any kind of
continuity
because you can't remember what happened
of thought,
the 3 days you weren't there.
No.
You don't know whether the story's new or not.
Exactly.
You don't know whether there's a new line in it.
Exactly.
You know, so I basically said to, we've moved old Andy Gregory out. He went to get a job at the Mail.
Mm.
Harbord then was supposed to be my number two.
Right.
And I said, and his title was night editor.
Right.
And my title was executive night editor.
Right.
So I was technically his boss.
Yeah.
So he said to me, he said, the thing is, Michael, I'm never coming in when you're here.
Mm.
And I said, why is that? He said, well, because I can't be your deputy.
Mm.
I said, yeah, but you are my deputy, Dave. No. He said, says here, and he showed me his card. He says, night editor. I said, well, that's not going to work, mate. I said, I work a 4-day week.
Yeah.
You're going to work a 4-day week.
Yeah, so there's going to be a day when we're going to have to cross over.
We're both going to be here the same day.
Yeah.
And you're going to be my number two.
Yeah.
He says, oh, no, I can't do that. I said, okay. He said, let me go away and think about it. So he goes away, right? He phones me and says, I've come up with a rota.
Mm.
And I was like, okay then. And I mean, he and I just didn't get on from day one.
Exactly.
And so I went and met him in one of those pubs in Stamford Street, right?
Yeah.
And he unfolds this thing. It's like a fucking Bayeux tapestry.
Yeah, yeah.
It's about 55 feet wide.
Right.
And it was all colour-coded. And he said, look, I've done all this. I've done it all the way for the next 3 months.
Yeah.
And at no time do I have to be in at the same time as you.
No.
And I just took one look at it and I said, look, Dave, I appreciate you spent a lot of time on this, but I couldn't give a fucking monkeys.
Yeah, exactly.
You're coming in or you're fucking out. It's up to you.
Exactly.
And he said, well, I'll have to go and see the editor.
Yeah.
And luckily, I was able to prime the editor because in those days, he was quite a good mate of mine, Richard Addis. And he went to see him. And Addis just handed him his resignation letter and said, there you go, sign that.
Yeah.
Do you know, to this day, he still hates me.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised.
I met him 10 years later at some press ball, right? And I went to shake his hand, and he pulled his hand away.
Yeah.
And he was like that guy, the Scottish guy
that
you
met.
Yeah,
Jim.
I said, what's up with you, Dave?
Yeah.
He said, I'm not shaking hands with you. I said, why not? He said, I hate you.
Yeah. Well, Jim, what's his name?
Yeah.
Said to me after a few drinks when we had a reunion in the old Express building, which is now owned by a Japanese bank, you know.
Yes.
And he came over, you know, full of courage
Venom.
And bravado after, you know, a few free glasses of wine. Can I have a word with you?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, of course you can. I was quite happy. I was, you know, pursuing my life in radio at TalkSport. And I think I was the program director and I had a glass in my hand.
I think I was there with you.
Yeah. And he said, I want to tell you something.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, Jim, what is it? You know, what's his name? Jim Watson. Jim Watson, that's right, yeah. He said, and he pointed at me, he says, I hated you then and I hate you now. So I was still laughing. I thought, is this a joke? You know, is he winding me up or something?
Yeah.
Is it? And then is he going to sort of, you know, mock punch me in the face and shake my hand or something?
No.
But when he got no reaction from me whatsoever, he just turned round and walked off and rejoined all his other wanker mates in the corner
who also hated
me because as when they reported, I'd give them a hard time for not bringing in stories, not working hard enough, wanting to do a four-day week.
I know.
But where I really fell down on the four-day week wasn't at the Express. When I was on the Evening Chronicle in Newcastle, we went on strike for about like 4 days. I know what the strike was about. They were always on strike. That's why I left in the end.
Yeah.
But during one meeting, and again, I'd been in a pub all lunchtime because we were on strike, you know. I came back and they said, right, you know, we've come to a deal with the management. The Manchester Evening News have just signed a deal for a four-day week. We are demanding a four-day week. Hey! You know, yes, come on, brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
So when they all went down, I said, excuse me, I'd like to make another proposition.
Yeah?
Yeah? What's that then? I'd only been there about 3 months. You know, I said, I think we should all work a six-day week.
Right.
Oh, you know, and they were going to lynch me, you know what I mean?
Well, didn't you think, well, presumably they thought you were joking, didn't they?
No, no, I did to start off with. I said, we should work a six-day week. I said, don't you realise if we want to make this paper great, then we've got to work a six-day week and make this paper better than other papers. Some twat then pipes up and says, since we went on strike 4 days ago, circulation has dropped by 5%.
Right.
I said, you wanker.
Right.
I said, do you want the circulation to drop to the point where they can't employ you as a reporter anymore, you idiot?
Right.
And after that, I was hated by everyone on the paper. I had to leave.
Luckily,
and
Jeff it's something Bayless, you've had to get used to over the years.
Jeff Bayless, the editor, when I eventually, you know, sent him a note saying, he said, Mike, he said, you're a very honourable man.
Yeah.
I wish you the best of luck and help me get a job on the Birmingham Evening Mail.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, do you remember the actual three-day week when they had the power cuts and we had, you know, the Ted Heath government and it was that question, you know, who runs Britain?
Yes.
You know, is it the Prime Minister or is it the coal workers?
And then the elected decided it was the coal workers.
It was the coal workers, But I remember I was at school, right? I went to Coleman Ford School in Kensington. Mm. They had to do it in such a way because we had two buildings, but only one of them could be heated.
Yeah.
So the old building was shut down and every from first year to fifth year...
Yeah.
They had 1 day a week. So I used to go in every Wednesday, in the morning only, and in the afternoon we'd get on a coach and go and play football down at Twickenham. But for the rest of the week, I had fuck all to do.
Yeah.
So I used to go to Hampstead, wander about on my bike, used to go in record shops, used to watch things you know, on TV, whenever we had the TV.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable because we would have literally candlelight in the evenings, apart from 1 hour. When there was electricity, where you were allowed to cook your dinner. I tell my kids this now. They look at me like I was living the dark ages.
Absolutely.
I was like, we had an hour in the morning to make breakfast. You'd somehow get to work, to work, if you did have a job, where there would be no electricity, right?
Yeah.
For most offices.
Yeah, sure.
Most houses had no electricity. And this went on, I'm sure, for about 2 months,
maybe
three.
Well, you know, the winter of discontent when it all ended in there?
Yeah, yeah.
Me and my mate Sangi, who sadly died, he was the guy who had the aneurysm in the back of his head when he was 35.
Right.
Terrible
shame.
The
one who fell over in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, with a glass of whiskey in his hand.
That's him.
We lived in these two little flats in Redditch, in Redditch Newtown. And they were brilliant because they were newly built. They cost us £10 a week. We had, you know, independence.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and all this kind of stuff. And they were built on estates that had linking roads to each other, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, you could walk them or cycle them and all that. So it was a pub in the middle of the, you know, the new town. And we said, well, see, you know, we had to walk there. There was no petrol in petrol stations. If there was, there was no electricity to pump the petrol into your car.
Right.
We got to the pub, it was candlelight. Unfortunately, you could pull the beer on a pump because that was by
the hand pump,
vacuum. Yeah,
that but was, they didn't have much of that in those days, did
they? No.
That was real ale in those days.
Yeah, yeah, that's
most
that's,
of it was
right.
carbonated.
But
stuff.
Nevertheless, we thought it was great because it was chaos and we were reporting on it all the time and all that. But what I'm saying, I didn't realise that the country was in a critical economic decay.
Well,
I was still getting my wages, I was still going to the bank, we were still going out drinking. I just couldn't believe it.
I know.
When I look back later and think how perilous the situation was.
It was when the Chancellor, I think, had to go to the IMF cap in hand.
MFI.
And asked to be fucking...
Sorry, IMF.
The IMF,
MFI
fund, was his furniture warehouse. He may have gone there as well, but, you know,
exactly,
I don't know whether they could help him out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if it wasn't for the IMF, Britain would have been fucked.
It would.
Official.
Completely.
We're the two mics. That is on the record.
He rang the bar, because there were no mobile phones in those days.
Right.
he said, hello, it's
Callan here. He used to call himself Callan.
Yeah, Callan here. I said, Daily Mirror London, London Daily Mirror. He said, you'll find my man, Conu, is in the bar there. Would you bring him to the phone? So Conu comes to the phone. As you know, Conu had an irascible appetite for women all his life.
Well, I mean, I don't know that. I do know that he's been married more than once.
He was known as Snorkelcock in the West Midlands.
Are you sure?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. When he was...
He's definitely still alive.
Yeah, he's definitely still alive, yeah, and doing a great job with some charity or something.
He is,
you know.
Yeah. He comes on Talk Radio quite a bit as well.
Yeah, he was known as Snorkelcock because in those days without mobile phones, he would disappear and resurface, you know, sometime later, you know what I mean?
So it's nothing to do with the word cock?
Well, you know, I've no idea. Yeah. I don't know why people called him
that. I've never heard that.
No, no, well, that's what he's called.
Okay, you said that's not just what you called him.
Oh, no, no. No, he's well known in the newspaper business as that.
As the third one lights the third one up, the first one says to me, "Do you want sex?" And I was like, similarly, slightly taken aback.
Well, presumably you said yes, but not with you.
Well, actually, no, I didn't say yes.
Right, okay.
And if I did say that, she probably might have punched me.
Yeah, exactly.
Or some bloke might have suddenly appeared out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because I think it's very dangerous to say yes to these people.
Yes.
I said, "No, it's very kind. Thank you very much indeed. But, you know, my child is upstairs with his mother, and I'm going to go up and be with them."
Yeah.
But thanks anyway.
Yeah.
Are you sure? I mean, they were quite sort of, but it was very brazen.
Yeah.
And this was in the middle
of
the lobby
business.
Of a hotel.
It's business to them.
Yeah, no, I know it's to them. Yeah. But what about the people that own the bloody hotel?
Yeah. Well, they're
what
all
are
they
in
doing
on it. Entertaining this.
They're all in on it.
Dave, I appreciate you spent a lot of time on this, but I couldn't give a fucking monkeys.
Yeah, exactly.
You're coming in or you're fucking out. It's up to you.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.